You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reformed book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
Hey guys, so we're back and today we have Golden Angel chatting with us and we are super excited to have her here because I know she's one of my favorite people and author and I see her all over the place and it's kind of super exciting to see your face here on our screen with us. Thank you for joining us. I know folks who know us know we're the Stalker Sisters and we like to talk about all things books and all things romance. So Golden, go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us all about you and what you do and who you are, and we'll go from there.
I am Golden Angel. I'm a USA Today bestselling author. I've been doing this, I've been self-publishing for 11 years now. And I left my day job in 2020 to become a full-time author, which is pretty amazing. And yeah. I write kinky romance. So I do historical spanking romance, contemporary BDSM, and kinky sci-fi. As Golden Angel, I have another pen name, Sinister Ange, under which I write dark romance and erotica and kind of more niche fetish. Sometimes it's kind of my throwaway pen name for just when I'm in a mood and want to write something that doesn't really go with my Golden Angel brand. And I also have a TikTok playlist called Just the Tip that I think kind of blew up on me and seems to be how a lot of authors know me, which has been really, really great because I know when I first started doing this, I got a lot of help at the beginning of my author. Once I joined the author community, I got a lot of help. At the beginning, I was too shy and but once I did join, so the beginning of that, I got a lot of help and it's been nice to be able to pass that on. So.
I love that.
Yeah, we're going to chat a lot about that too, because that's a big part of how a lot of people know you. So yeah. I know we definitely want to talk about that. Now, one of the things I always find interesting is how people find different authors. And for me, I found you, even though you live, I think, like 35 or 40 minutes away from me, I found you through Ron when we were starting to put together Charm City Romanticon for this year, 2 years ago, because it had been in the works for a while. We were trying to build a big variety of authors. And Ron was like, you've got to talk to Golden Angel. And oh, by the way, I think she lives near you. And I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. So I owe this friendship and this relationship and all of this to Ron. So Ron, how did you find Golden?
We were talking about it off air. I think the first time I found her on TikTok because I was doing the baby author thing and looking for people who knew what they were doing. But I think the first book I read from her, I read because of a Facebook promo that came across my feed. And the first one I read was Bondage Buddies, I think. I think that was the first one. And then I fell in love because like, that's totally my wheelhouse. And then I found everything and I read everything she wrote, so.
It's a rabbit hole. I know. I love it. And it's like, this leads to that and that leads to that. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm in the mood for this. And you have such a variety of things that you write, which is pretty cool. So we're going to talk about that too. I know there's all these things we're going to talk about. But Julie, how did you find Golden Angel?
The exact same way that you did. It was while we were planning and looking for authors that would bring in some people, we thought of you.
Mm-hmm.
And fit the vibe. That was really important for authors. We're authors who fit the vibe because we were creating something a little different. So we were looking for something a little different.
Charm City has a great vibe.
Thank you. It's all about the people who were there. Susie, you found Golden. How'd you find Golden Angel?
Charm City.
Yeah.
I love that. So what drew you in? I got to ask. Susie, when you were looking at all these authors, what drew you in?
The Hugo.
The Hugo. You and everybody else at the panels.
My goal was to read at least one book from every author. And then they had like this board game. And I'm like, who's that cow? And I'm like, and then, yeah, I had to read it.
Well, that was hilarious because Golden's like, I don't know who I am. Like, I don't see my slipper here. And I'm like, well, I just am taking this from Ron. Ron, someone, don't blame me, blame Ron. And then, anyway.
I'd known it was my Sinister Ange pen name that was being referenced. The cow would have been a bigger clue for me.
I love it. I love that there was this that little, because we were trying to, okay, so we had this bingo game for Charm City Romanticon, and there was, because we were doing a pajama party, and there was a slipper for each, a pair of slippers for each author that represented something that they did. It could be where they were from, what kind of stories they wrote, something about a book. Some things were pretty obvious. You know, there was Bigfoot, which was, you know, pretty obvious for a lot of people. And some things were a little bit more obscure. And that was one that was a little bit more obscure. And you could really tell, it was like, people are asking, I don't, the authors, is the cow, are the cows you? And people were like, no, I'm not the cow. And then they're like, why? Why is there a cow on here? Who's the cow? So that worked out perfectly. But we were trying to find some that would be more deep dives. So it wasn't just kind of a gimme. And then everybody started talking about the Hugh cow. So, okay, now you have to talk about it.
Yeah, and then it came up in every single panel. So by the time we reached the signing, when they could get the board signed, we all knew the cow was me, because that book came up in every single panel.
I think that's fantastic that the panel educated. Like, I mean, that was kind of why we set it up that way. So that was perfect.
That was perfect.
Well, it was kind of tough. It was a tough thing for Julie to do, and I think she did an amazing job to come up with slippers that we could actually find slippers for. So we were all set, and they're like, what do we do for Golden? I don't know. See if you can find a cow.
Well, and part of it also was, you have such a wide range of what you write. So trying to find something that would be completely representative of everything was difficult, because you have such a range. So then it was like, okay, so we're not going to find something that's representative of everything. Let's find something that's obscure, but will spark a lot of conversation. So I think that's what happened.
Yeah, it did.
So, okay, why did you start? Let's start right off the bat. Why did you start writing? I know you said you've been an author for 11 years, quit your full-time job and became a full-time author. So you went from one full-time to another full-time in 2020. Why did you start writing, and why did you make that shift in 2020?
Well, I started publishing in 2012, but I actually started writing and putting it up on the internet in 2005. On a website called literotica.com, and which is also where I got my pen name from, because Golden Angel was my username on Literotica. I'm a speed reader, and I went to college, and, you know, back when I was a teenager, the internet was pretty new, and so we only had the one computer that dial up that hooked up to it. So my parents were very aware of anything that my brother and I were doing on the computer. So, you know, college student gets away, finally has a computer to herself and can look at whatever she wants on the internet. So of course I went looking for porn, which I discovered I didn't really like that much. However, by looking for porn sites, I stumbled across Literotica, which has both videos and stories. And I found the stories. I was like, well, let me read a few of these. And it turned out, oh, I just don't want to watch porn. I want to read it. And like, there were so many new concepts to me. There were all these categories that I'm like, what even is this? I mean, it's very sheltered, you know, like we didn't grow up with the internet. There was a lot of stuff I didn't know about. I discovered the BDSM category and kind of the like non-con, which is sort of like dark romance category, but also just like straight up non-con. And then just like the, you know, like the regular romance, sci-fi, like it had everything. And I read through my favorite categories. It took me about 2 years, but I read through every single story on that website that was in those categories. Wow. And then that was it. And then new stories release every day, but they weren't all in the categories that I wanted to read. And they weren't all stories that I wanted to read. And I started, instead of, I don't know, after like a few months, it kind of got to a point of like, well, instead of waiting for exactly what I want to be released and just rereading my favorites, why don't I try writing what I want to read? And I've always been a big reader. I've always been writing. It was usually poetry before that. And I did, you know, or like stuff for school assignments, but I loved writing fiction. I just hadn't done it for anything. So I started writing out a story that had everything that I wanted to read in it. And I put it up on Literotica, and I was very lucky. People were very encouraging and very kind, which does not always happen on these free websites.
Yep.
Like, if you want the most vicious criticism you can get, put it up for free somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah, that hasn't changed.
No, that hasn't changed. So yeah, I ended up, people were so encouraging and they got kind of invested in the stories, and I realized, hey, I really like doing this. And so I just kept writing the stories that I wanted to read. And then at some point, there was like a contest on the website which was really more about quantity than quality, but it was like you had to write it, you earned points for writing stories, and you earned them by writing in different categories, and like you could only earn a certain number of points per category. So I ended up writing in every category that was on that site. I did that for 2 years in a row. I placed second and third, I believe, if I remember correctly. So I actually got like a little bit of money from that. And that was the first time I ever got paid for my writing. And then in 2011, end of 2011, I was finishing up writing a long running, like multi-chapter story called The Venus School of Sex. Several of the people who were super invested in it started reaching out to me and saying, hey, I would like to like own this, so that like if this website ever disappears or whatever, like that I own it, that I don't lose this story. Would you consider self-publishing it? And I was vaguely aware of self-publishing, but I hadn't looked into it. It wasn't something that I was at all on my radar. It was kind of like, no, I write stories for a website. Like it's free. Like I'm not like a real author. So I was like, okay, well, but if they're asking for it, then yeah, I can do this for them. Like I am terrible at saying no to people. So I was like, yes, of course, yeah. You want it. I will find a way to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that publishing a book was really easy. It still is. The actual act of publishing the book is the easiest part. Amazon provided, and all the other retailers that I put it up on provided like how-to guides on how to do it. You could make your own cover. And back then it didn't matter that the cover was terrible or that the editing wasn't really there, because there just wasn't the same kind of content. Like if you wanted to read BDSM, erotica, or romance, your options were very limited, even mm-hmm. with the indies starting to put out content. The options were very limited. So I put out the story, and I knew that I had wanted to write a follow-up for it that I didn't really think fit the website format. So I went ahead and wrote it as a book. And then I wrote the next two books that I kind of had in mind that finished out the main character's whole storyline. And then at that point, you know, it was the golden age of indie publishing. So just by doing that, I was making enough money to be like, oh, we've got like, I could like get a couple tanks of gas and some groceries on this. Wow. This is great. You know, like my husband and I had just gotten married. We still had a lot of debt. I still had student loans I was paying off and sure. credit card debt that was horrifically high. And so any kind of extra income was really exciting. And then it just kind of, so then I kept going, and I was writing for the website and publishing for a while. And then in around 2015, I think I found the author community, and yeah, everything just kind of snowballed. This was not ever intended to be a career for me. I just started writing for a website and things happen.
I love that. Things happen for a reason though.
Yeah.
So then
what did you do prior to writing?
A little bit of everything. I never considered myself ambitious. I do now. Now I know I am, but I didn't think I was, because I was not invested in any of my careers. I didn't consider, they were jobs. They weren't careers, mm-hmm. because what I really wanted was just enough money to do the things that I wanted to do outside of work. But the last job that I had and the job that I had when I started publishing was working at an accounting firm. And that's when I really got into book world stuff.
Definitely different.
Yes.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I love that you said I never considered anything really a career. It was just I was going from job to job, making money. I needed to do the things that I wanted to do when I wasn't doing the job. And then you landed on something that stuck, that was relevant and exciting. And so 2020 rolls around. And was pandemic a big part of your decision to do this full time? Or was it a progression of how things had built for you in the
It was publishing. A progression of how things had built for me. So I was planning that April 2020 was it for me. That was my last tax season. And then I was going to go full time. I had been working towards going full time from in about 2018. I realized I think I can go full time, but I need to make sure. Like I don't do well with instability, which is the career I've chosen. I mean, you know, like there were other careers that I looked at one point, like I wanted to be an actress at one point and decided not to go into theater because I was like, no, I want stability. So here I am. But in 2018, I went, you know what? I think I can do this. I think I can make this full time. And I started working towards that. And so by end of 2019, I was feeling very comfortable. I told my husband, I started talking to my work to let them know, like, this is coming up. I'm pretty, you know, this last tax season, everything like that. And then COVID happened. It was interesting because one of the things I was the most scared about leaving my day job was working at home. Because I'm a very social person. I like social interaction. I loved going to work and seeing my coworkers. And that was one of that and health insurance were the two big barriers for me. And then the pandemic happened and I was like, well, I'm not leaving my job now. I need that switching right. Health insurance in the middle of a global pandemic. And also the whole world changed. I have no idea what this is going to do to books and authoring and everything like that. I went ahead and was like, okay, I'm going to stick around for a little longer. But you know, I started working from home because, you know, at my day job, and quickly discovered that without the people, I actually didn't like my day job that much.
And, I understand that.
Yeah. And by July, it was very clear to me that my income hadn't really been affected. If anything, I was making more because more people were staying home and reading. Mm-hmm. And so I said, all right, if I'm going to be stuck at home and miserable working at home, I might as well be doing a job that I love instead of doing this other job and wishing I was doing what I love. So I went ahead and said, all right, we're doing it. I'm making the jump. Yeah, it was definitely a little terrifying, but the fact that I am a very careful, like it took me 2 years to get to that point. Mm-hmm. Of being like, I think this is something I could do to making sure, like, yes, this is the income is relatively stable and we can pay for everything and it's fine. Because my husband was a stay-at-home dad by that point. We'd had my daughter. My income just kind of had already replaced his. The book income had already replaced his. And then in 2018, and then by 2020, it had replaced mine as well and said, all right, let's do it.
I love it.
It's a huge leap because you don't know. You know, yeah. That was the indie author world has kind of exploded since 2020. And it's not so much small pond anymore. You know, there's a lot more things out there to read. So having that, the background that you had, the faith that you had to do it also, I think it says a lot about your confidence, but also planning. Yeah. You know, you put things in place to make sure that it was sustainable and you made sure it was before you took the leap because you said, you know, you're a mom and your wife and you've got family that you were providing for. So that's, I love that you were able to do that because a lot of people, excuse me, are like, you know, it's a hobby. What you do is right. A hobby. And it's like, well, no, for a lot of people, this is not a hobby. For a lot of people, this is their career. This is their chosen profession. This is their life.
And I was only one of those people saying it was a hobby for like years. And it's fine if it's a hobby and it never becomes, you know, more than that. But it is, for those of us who it is a career, it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Susie, you had a good question.
Have your life experiences influenced your writing or characters?
God, yes, absolutely. I like to joke that despite being a writer, that I'm horrifically uncreative. And it's not true, but it's kind of true when you look at my early books. The Sassy Submissive, which is one of the early, not the first, but it's the one of the first 10 books that I wrote. And the main character is named Angel, and she just happens to look, talk, and act just like me. And her hero is named Adam, which also just happens to be my husband's name, and he happens to look, talk, and act exactly like my husband. Total coincidence.
That little disclaimer at the beginning of the book that, you know, bears no likeness to anybody in real life. Oh, we're just gonna,
totally a coincidence, I promise. Yes, no, especially my contemporary books, things are heavily influenced. I've had a lot of readers tell me that they feel like my Stronghold and Marquee series in particular are just like hanging out with a group of friends, like their friends. And I was like, well, if you ever came and hung out with me and my friends, you'd probably feel the same way. And my friends are all well aware that bits of their personality, things that they say, things that they've done are very likely to show up in my books.
So be kind to Golden, to Golden Angel, because if not, you don't wind up in the friend circle. You wind up. I love when authors are like, don't hear my friends because I'll put you in book and then I'll kill you. So.
I mean, I let people know. My friends and family all know what I do, and they are very aware that
I love that. There is a strong sense in the community sometimes of people who are worried about their friends and family finding out what they write or even what they read. More and more, I find more people becoming more open about romance, reading it, writing it, being supportive of it. But there's still a generalized social taboo around even within romance, within things within the romance community. You know, so there are some topics that are seen as perfectly relevant and totally okay. And then there are some even within the community where people are like, we don't talk about that. And that goes on, that goes towards your question. So I wanted you to pick up with that.
I love them. And your books. I love all of your books, but you include a lot of kink in your themes, across your whole backlist, kink is pretty prevalent. Why is it such a big part of what you write? Is it just your personal preference, or is it that
mostly
that you
personal
have an agenda?
Preference? It was when I got onto Lit Erotica was when I discovered I was kinky. Before that, I didn't know what it was. I would not have been able to explain to you why certain scenes in movies made me feel funny, but I knew that they did. You know, like people talk about Princess Leia's bikini. I was always far more interested in the collar and leash around, you know, the collar around her neck and the leash. And I could not explain to you why that was, until I discovered Lit Erotica and the BDSM category. And so I think that for me, that has a lot to do with it. You know, the first kinky romances that I read were like Lexi Blake, Calypso Master, Cherie Sinclair. And that's what I wanted to be. And those were the books that drew me in the most and kink is one of those things where BDSM, not just kink, BDSM specifically is one of those things that appealed to me a lot. I think because when I discovered it, I was in a relationship where it was, you know, we were young high school sweethearts, communication was not always great. There was a lot of kind of like implied consent. There was there were things about it that were very toxic, and it wasn't really either of our fault. We were very, you know, we were very young. We'd grown together, but we'd kind of grown in a way that wasn't really healthy for either of us. Discovering that I was submissive and that I was kinky, getting tools around that helped me out of that relationship for one, and into a much healthier place, because that there were aspects of my nature that were being used against me that I didn't realize at the time, and that he didn't, you know, like he didn't realize at the time, but just kind of like learning more about myself. And that was a lot of self-discovery for me. So I think I wanted that to be out there for other people. Another big thing for me was that as much as I love kinky romance and reading about kinky billionaires who have all the money in the world to have fabulous dungeons and everything, I was not seeing the people I knew who were in the kink community kind of being represented. And I wouldn't say that I'm really part of that community, honestly. Like, I'm kind of on the outskirts. My husband and I don't participate or go to munches or anything, but like, I'm aware of, and I have friends in, and it kind of started to frustrate me a little bit that I wasn't seeing that there was nothing, not nothing, I'm sure there were other authors, but that I wasn't finding very much representation for just completely regular people with regular relationships having kink as part of their sex life. And I wanted that. I wanted people to know that it was possible, even if you weren't a billionaire or you weren't a super spy or you weren't some kind of heavy duty army macho man. Like, it's just regular people like can just be kinky too. And so that was a big part of it for me. Those are the scenes that I enjoy writing. I will say I'm getting, after over 70 books, I'm getting a little tired of writing the in-depth sex scenes, and my next pen name will be not have kink and will not be erotic romance. It's going to be steamy, but I still, there's still some of my favorite scenes to write. I just would like a break every now and then.
Sure. I think one of the very first times I reached out to you after I found your backlist was to say just that, was that I see my friends in this, in your books, they're very true to life, that they're accessible, and they're not everybody's a billionaire.
Because it meant a lot to me, because that was exactly what I'd been trying to do. So
you nailed it. And for me, because that's my niche. It was great to find finally somebody that was doing blue collar, blue collar bondage. I don't know whether that's a thing or not, but that's what I called it.
It is now.
Yes, blue collar bondage. I was very impressed.
Well, now I love that it normalizes also, because we do talk a lot in the community about taboo and a lot of things that people will feel uncomfortable discussing. And I think part of it is because you've not been exposed to it. You've not experienced it. And it makes it very difficult to talk about something without judgment if you don't see it as being realistic or something that you can appreciate or something that you can value. And, you know, it's not for everybody. I'm not going to, you know, there are some people who are like, they're messaging me like, I'm looking for a new book. I'm looking for this, that, the other thing. And I'll say something and they're like, oh, that says it has BDSM in it. And that's really not my thing. And I'm like, all right, I get it. That's totally fine. If it's a taboo thing you're worried about and you're worried about people judging you, I'll tell you, get over it. You don't know until you read it. If it's just you've read it and it's not your thing, you're not comfortable, okay, cool. That's totally fine. Yeah. But I think finding a way to normalize it by saying it's not something that billionaires do in, you know, this $3 million dungeon, that it's something that is a normal element of people's lives, and then picking up a book where you can read it and go, like you said, oh, well, that could be me and my friends, you know, and it's not presented as icky, and it's not presented as secretive and hidden. It's respected. That's part of what I love about the way that you write, is that it's written as something that's real and respected and appreciated and enjoyed, and not to be hidden, because, oh my God, if someone finds out, I could lose my job. I could lose my kids. Right. I get these things I keep hearing that are associated with it. I'm like, that's not how that works. That's not the reality.
I mean, I think there are some places where it would work like that. And I have some author friends who do live in places where they're like, nope, no one will ever know my pen name, because I know, I already know. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I'm really lucky that I live in an area and with, you know, and have really supportive family and friends and an area that's pretty open-minded anyway about all sorts of stuff. And I mean, down in DC, they have like the yearly fet ball.
Yep.
And, you know, like,
yep. We are in a very progressive area.
Yeah.
Love that. But you're right. There are places where people aren't recognized for the humanity behind what they enjoy reading, writing, doing. So, but I love that your books make it real. You know, it's not seen as something that's, I love that element of it.
So how do you go from writing contemporary BDSM to writing historical spanking, which are awesome?
Thank you. Well, I love historical romance. Like, I love historical romance. It's always been one of my favorites. And it just kind of started to get under my skin that, like, every time I would read a historical, like an actual historical romance, and the hero would threaten the heroine, like, you do that one more time and you're going over my knee. And then she would do it and nothing would happen. Or like, maybe she'd get like a light tap and I'm like, this isn't, no, I need more than this. And then I started finding historical erotica. But the problem with a lot of the historical erotica, or the like the kinky historical stuff that I was finding, the problem for me was that it didn't include all the stuff that I loved about historical romance. Like, sure, it was set in the time period, but a lot of the time it was with a maid, or you know, there would be a severe power imbalance, which I loved. But what I really wanted was the balls and the teas and the high society and the rules and the strictures and the scandals, but also with kink and spanking. And so for me, that was, again, it was just one of those instances of, I can't find enough of what I want to read, and so I'm gonna try writing it. And I, awesome. The first book I did leaned a little bit more towards it's called Birching His Bride. And it does lean, that particular series does lean a little bit more towards kind of what I was describing as the historical erotica stuff, because that's what I was reading. That's what I could find. That was kind of what was in my brain. But I did get to put in, you know, the stuff that I loved, like the balls and the honeymoon to France and, you know, dinner parties and stuff like that. And then by the time I wrote the second series, I was able to incorporate a lot more of those kinds of things. And then my third series, I added in spies. I really, you know, Stephanie Lawrence is one of my favorite historical romance authors, and I really wanted to write basically sinsters with spankings. And so tell me that that's what they made them think of, and it made me so happy.
I love that. I always say, if you don't find the book you want to read, write it. And I love that you did that. And I don't think I have this in the questions, but this is something we talked a little bit about at Charm, actually. A lot of authors talk about staying in your lane and only writing one thing, or developing different ways to do it. And you have multiple subgenres you write in, and you have a pen name for one element of the subgenres, but most of your subgenres that you write are vastly different, but you write them in under one name. Why did you decide to do that?
I didn't know any better. I don't regret it either. I wouldn't change it. So I think when people say stay in your lane, what they really mean, and what the best and what the core of that advice is stay true to your brand. It also depends on what your goal is. Like, if your goal is to make as much money as quickly as possible and to establish yourself as the author of whatever genre, then yes, the more specific you can get, the better. And especially when it comes to making money quickly, if you can niche down and say, these are all cowboy second chance romances set on a ranch in a small town, that's a really good marketing tactic. For me, my brain doesn't work that way. I can't write that way. I have to try, like, all of my series, sure, they're kinky. But I explore different kinks. I explore different kinds of relationships. I explore different levels, like different intensity in like how kinky the relationship is. Because for me, that's what's fun. I like exploring and I like doing the different thing every book. And if I wasn't doing that, I don't think I would be as interested in writing. So part of it is, can you do that? If not, what can you do to create a lane for yourself? So I kind of like to joke that my lane is the kink highway, because the only books that I've had that haven't really been successful are my Shifter series, which also happened to be my only vanilla series, which is why they're going to get moved to a different pen name. But they, you know, I think a lot of it really does come down to Golden Angel, my brand, whether regardless of what genre I'm writing, is, you know, that it's, unless it's more shifters, you know that it's going to be kinky. You know that it's going to be a large group of friends or family. You know that the character stories are all going to intertwine. You know that it's going to have some level of realism to it. I mean, even my historicals, I kind of try to keep it to, it is dukes and lords and ladies, but, you know, that is kind of like the level of realism that historical romance readers expect. Mm-hmm. I try not to get too out there with like what they're doing. I do try to keep it like historically realistic, I guess. And you also know that there's going to be like, they're going to be funny. Like that's the thing that most of my readers say, is they always come away laughing. And a lot of my readers call them comfort reads. You know, it's not going to be like the angstiest mm-hmm. books that I get would still not be considered high angst books. It's like some angst. For me, they're super high angst books, but they're like, on the actual angst level, they're not that angsty. And that's my brand. And so that's my lane. And so it doesn't matter if you're picking up a historical romance, a contemporary romance, a sci-fi romance, daddy dom, pirate, whatever, there are certain guarantees that you know that you're getting from a Golden Angel book. And that is really what I think people mean when they say lane. But because there have been a lot of authors who are very successful at niching down and writing about one specific topic and have found a really good level of success that way, I think that that's what ends up mm-hmm. people kind of interpreting as a lane.
No, it absolutely does. And for me, thank you for the low angst, because there's only so much I can handle. Yes. I am one that will flip to the back of the book, even though I know there's going to be an HEA, to make sure that there really is. And then I'll go back mm-hmm. and see just how many chapters I'm going to have to sit through before they work their shit out and get back together. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate having books that don't go down that route.
Yeah.
That, you know, deal with relationships and deal with the ins and outs of that without the breakup, you know, the third act dark moment, whatever. But and I do love that, like you said, it's, you span several genres, subgenres, but the kink highway, I like that, because it people know when they pick up one of your books that that's what they're going to get, whether it's historical or not, and whatever it happens to be, unless it's, like you said, your shifters, which we have to talk
they
about
follow
that.
Everything else they've still got the humor, the big family, yeah. the side characters that show up in multiple books, they've got all the same things, just no kinks.
So what's the basis of the shifters, because this I absolutely love.
So it's currently called the Big Bad Bunny series, and basically I wanted to write about the Beast of Cair Bannog from Monty Python and the Holy Grail as a shifter. I just thought the idea of a tiny, vicious bunny as a shifter was hilarious. And I really liked the idea of, and when I wrote it, I decided that they were science experiments. And so I needed her to have a reason to have vicious claws and teeth. So they're actually bunny bears. And it's a whole family, and the small one is the successful experiment. So the other four siblings are all bear-sized bunnies with claws and teeth.
I love that so much.
I have so much fun writing. I'm currently in the middle of tweaking them, rewriting the first book a little bit before I move it over, before I start my new pen name. So they are currently up under Golden Angel, but at some point, probably by the end of this year, they're going to be taken down, so that next year they'll release as Angel Gold books.
I love that. But you know, that's a huge thing to recognize when something is not performing as well as it might, or as well as you want to look at it and say, all right, what's different here versus here? Why is this gangbusters and this is crickets? And then, you know, because like you said, people know when they're looking at a Golden Angel book, they're going to have kink in some fashion. And if it doesn't, it's like, huh, well, that's not what I was expecting. It wasn't bad. It's just not what I was expecting. So yes. I love that you have that recognition of, okay, maybe something else has to happen with this because it's not happening here. So maybe it'll happen there. I love one that you said about how it's, you know, you're rebranding and taking it down and a new name for it. And you had mentioned earlier about all these things that you've learned as you've gone, which actually leads into Julie's question, which I thought was fantastic. And I was like, oh, this is perfect.
Just the tip. Tell us more about it. I can tell you that I actually yesterday, somebody was asking me questions and I'm like, you should go on Golden Angel's TikTok. She does this thing called Just the Tip. And I think she's going to. So
I have sent many people there. I'm like, oh yeah. Check out Golden Angel's Just the Tip. So, all right, tell us more.
That was another thing that just kind of was an accident.
I love that.
You know, I've been around for a while and I'm a member of various author groups on Facebook and I try to make myself available for questions. And like, if I see questions being asked in an author group, I answer it. So sometimes people will reach out to me afterwards and it does take up a fair amount of time. And so, you know, and I see a lot of the same questions over and over and over and over again. And I started seeing them on TikTok now too. And I said to some of my friends, you know, I don't know if I'm the right person to do this, but there are some like questions out there that are just so common and people are constantly asking them. And it's, and I feel, I just want to do like a tip thing on TikTok or something with a video that answers it so that when they ask, I can just be like, look, here's the video that answers your question. And just send them that instead of typing out the response over and over again. Cause I get tired, you know, I could probably just save them in a document, but I didn't think of that. I thought of doing a video. And one of my friends that I was telling this is, oh, you should call it Just the Tip. And I was like, that's funny.
I love when you do. Just
like, because that's what I think of for you, right? And then I had these shelves up behind me, and I put my stuffed peen on the shelf, and I was like, "Ooh, if I do just the tip, I can point at the tip every time I say it, and see if anyone notices."
I noticed them.
It's always funny to me when someone's like, "Oh my god, I've been watching your videos for like a month, and I just noticed." You're pointing at the tip of the stuffed peen. And I'm like, yeah, that's on purpose.
And it's perfect.
I love it.
But yeah, it was one of those things I wanted to be able to answer questions for people. I wanted to have a place that I could just send them to be like, look, here's the answer to a lot of your questions. And it just blew up in a way that I did not really expect. And then all of a sudden people, yeah, like my follower count went crazy. I think the video that really did it was one that I did about kind of the differences between KU and wide and some and my thoughts on those differences. And it just kind of blew up and all of a sudden I was like, oh, I went from like 2,000 followers to like 10. What happened? And so I just, you know, sometimes I recycle content because it is, you know, it's questions that I see coming up and I'll phrase the answer in a slightly different way and things don't always cross people's timelines. But a lot of the time it did work out the way I wanted it to, in that, you know, a lot of the time if I see questions about something, I can just go grab the video that I know I've done on it and be like, oh, here you go. This has the information that I have to give you. And it has been a time saver.
No, I know. And it's, I was going to ask you what some of your more popular ones were, because I know a lot of authors watch. And so most of your content is geared towards other authors, other writers, but recently you've been doing ones that are geared towards readers also.
So I've started, again, same thing. I started noticing a lot of reader questions happening. I don't know how long I'll have content for that, but I'll at least have one playlist where it'll be like, hey, there's things that if there's, because I, you know, a lot of readers want to know how KU works. They want to make sure that the authors are getting paid. They want to know if rereading it through KU will means that the author gets paid again. It doesn't. But, you know, they want to write a review. They don't know how to. They want to join an art team. They don't know how to. They're going to a book convention. They want to know what to expect. They want to know how to find a book convention near them. That was definitely the most popular reader one so far, was finding a book convention. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's so how do you do it? They're everywhere. You just don't know about them until all of a sudden, and like the ones you do start knowing about them, you find out about more and more and more and more. But when you don't know about them or how to get involved in them, it's like you don't see them at all. It's this weird thing on how it works.
And as the community grows, and it is growing, the romance community is growing, and it's, I think it becomes more and more important for people who are really well established in it to start kind of setting, you know, I don't want to say setting the tone, because that doesn't sound right, but it kind of is, because I know you did one recently about, you know, how to act at a book convention. And I was like, it's kind of sad that we have to do things like that. It's upsetting, but I think sometimes people genuinely don't know. Okay, I will try to give people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they just don't know. Sometimes people just need to be called out.
And book conventions have changed. You know, a lot of the bad behavior that I was talking about in that particular video, I think is in part because people are going to these high energy, heavily peopled events. They've never been to one before. And on top of that, so they don't, you know, they don't know the kind of the unspoken, the unwritten rules that have kind of guided the book events in the past. And then on top of that, really popular authors are bringing completely exclusive content to the book conventions. So it's these very sought after, you're not going to be able to get it anywhere else, items. And when you add that in with kind of the inexperience and the idea that like, oh, well, I want that and I should be able to get that because I'm here. And not that I think that's done in a malicious way. I think that it is done out of kind of like, that's the understanding that they have, you know? And I think it just kind of created this perfect storm at a couple of events in the recent years of people who are new and very excited to be there and also very overwhelmed. I don't think that they go in knowing that there's or expecting the kind of lines and the kind of craziness and the kind of just crush of people that can be at some of these very large events. And then they don't know what's expected of them. They've haven't, you know, been to events to learn the unspoken rules that a lot of the kind of veteran book convention goers live by. And I think the excitement and the energy can become very overwhelming. And then there are just people who, and then of course, you know, there are always just the people who are just entitled and think that they can do what they want and take what they want and take advantage of that atmosphere to do so.
Yeah. And there's more and more, book events coming up. I know there have been a couple we know of that have stopped operating, and then there's each year we keep seeing more. I mean, ours this year was brand new, and it was, you know, it's different than what a lot of them are out there. It's definitely different, different atmosphere, different size, whatever. But there were people who were contacting us in advance, even saying, do we have to bring our own books, or will authors have books there for sale? Or do we have to buy the books from the authors there, or can we bring books with us? Can we get things signed that are not books? So there's a lot of questions, because with more events and more people reading it, there are more people going to events that, like you said, they've never been. And they have no idea. When I went to Indies that first year, I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know what to expect as far as lines. I didn't know what to expect as far as what I could bring. It's all very new. So knowing that there's a place you can go to where it's like, okay, look, I've been doing this for a long time, so let me give you some information based on my experience about how this works, what you can do, what you can't do. And sometimes even going to a group to find that can be really overwhelming. So the fact that it's video, I think one, I love it's engaging. It's fun. It's quick. It's like short attention span theater. It's not a 20 minute everything dump. It's a, 3 minute, whatever. It's, just the tip. Here's the info. And I love it. So talking about cons, Susie, what was your question?
You've been doing a lot more events lately. Why are they so important to you?
For me, they're a way to give back to my readers. It is weird sometimes to think of myself as someone that other people want to meet. And yet I found that when I went to events, that was true. And there would be people who would travel hours sometimes to be at an event just because I was going to be there, which was incredibly humbling and amazing. And they were always really grateful that I had come to their area and to be at an event that they could make it to. The events are hard. They take time. They take time away from your writing. They take time away from your marketing. They take time away from your family. And it's not just the time that you're there. It's the prep for the event. It's getting everything together. There's a lot of money involved in getting the swag, in getting the books, in getting the things that you need for your table. And then for a lot of authors, including myself, and I, not as much for me because I do, for the most part, get energized by social interaction, but a lot of authors are introverts. And so for them, there's also recuperation time afterwards because it is a lot of peopling, and some conventions more so than others. So for me, it's been a way to give back and to try to get out there to the people who would like to meet me and be in a place that is more convenient for them and to make myself available. If they want signed books, if they want a picture, if they want to just say hi or they want a hug, whatever, to thank them for helping me get to where I am today. It is also, again, I am a people-ing person. I love meeting people. I love meeting the readers. I love meeting the other authors. Sometimes it's a chance to get together with friends. Sometimes it's a chance to travel to somewhere that I really want to go. And hey, now it's also a tax write-off. Like there is that aspect too. I'm looking forward to eventually going overseas, and I will absolutely be pairing my overseas travel with a book convention because that's part of what makes it affordable for me. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it is about being there for readers who want me there. And which is also why I try to spread out what I'm doing. It's also why I think I've overscheduled myself, because I'm got a little too focused on trying to be in as many places and at as many events as possible, as opposed to taking care of myself, which is very on brand for me, to be perfectly honest. So
I understand.
I like to be where the people are, and I have massive FOMO. So
I get that too. There is, I think, an element of a lot of us that's like, I want to do all the things because doing all the things makes me happy. And, sometimes doing all the things makes you happy until you're like, I can't do another thing. If I do another thing, I'm going, my brain's going to explode. So the fact that you do all of these events and the reason that you do it, I know as readers, we appreciate it. But yeah, please take care of yourself.
I'm working on it. 2025 is the year of self-care.
2025. Okay.
It's not next year. I'm already overscheduled for next year. It's fine.
So Julie will put up all of your links and everything. People can find where you're going to be at your next event, and they can come and see you at all the things. And so I know I'm going to see you at Write Women in Bowie, Maryland in October.
Yeah, October.
And then we'll see you again in Charm in April of 2024. But you've got a lot of other events coming up also. So we'll make sure we get all those listed. It's fine. Wow, it's fine. So we've got, okay. Anything else that you wanted to bring up? Because we covered so much stuff. I'm trying to remember if there were any other questions that I'm looking back through my notes. I think we have like our 10 random. We like to just kind of switch it up a little bit and do a this or that with our authors to see where you fall on different things. But anything else that you wanted to bring up that you want writers to know, readers to know, people in the community to know?
Yeah, what's next for you?
Next for me, I just had a book release, part of a multi-author series called Leo, which is the part of the Masters of the Zodiac series, and it's all based on astrology and stuff. And it's might be the funniest book I've ever written. and I'm currently working
Add
on...
Add to cart.
Yeah. That's one of my few KU books too. I don't normally write in KU. But because it's part of a multi-author series, and then right now I'm working on Shallow Submission, which is part of my Masters of Marquee book, and that'll Marquee series, and that one will be out in the fall. I think either October or November. I can't remember what the pre-order is, but either October or November. And then personally, my next event, I'm going to be signing at the Maryland Renaissance Festival, which is like literally one of my dreams come true. So I'm very excited about that. And that's happening on September 3rd.
I love it.
Yeah. And in between that, I'm actually getting a break and just spending time. I mean, break. I'm spending time with friends and family. So my schedule is still packed, but with different things.
I didn't ask this, but I just thought about it. How many books in general do you publish a year?
I have what I call my four main releases. So two of my historicals and two of my contemporaries release every year. And then outside of that, I usually have a couple small projects that I do, anthologies or the multi-author series, which tend to have less a smaller word count than I have for my main series books, which tend to run a little long.
We like big books. Bring on the girthy ones. No. I'm never going to complain about that. One of those.
I try to write short sometimes, but it's not my favorite.
You write the story that you write. That is one of the things I am constantly reminding authors of is, you have to give the story time to tell itself. And yeah, sometimes you can cut certain things that are irrelevant, but sometimes it's not irrelevant. Sometimes it needs to be there.
It's part of the story.
Now, the trick for me is the smaller the cast of characters, the shorter I can make the story. So my main series, because they have big groups of friends and families, I always want to incorporate as many of them as possible in every book, which tends to make the books bigger because you're getting extra stuff going on.
Not going to turn that down.
Nope.
Awesome.
All right. So let's do our this and that real quick.
Okay.
And then we'll let you off the hook. I think Julie's starting.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Bad haircut or bad hair dye?
Bad haircut. So I can always style it differently.
True. Colors there.
Beach or mountain vacation?
Beach.
Plan ahead or live in the moment?
Plan ahead. Oh my God, please don't ask me to live in the moment.
Morning person or a night owl?
Both. I don't sleep.
Cookies or cake?
Ooh. Oh, rude.
I get that answer a lot.
I mean, what kind of cookies and what kind of cake? There's like nuance here.
Okay, I'll let you off the hook. Vanilla or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Draft or edit?
Draft. Editing is my least favorite thing.
I hear that a lot. Every day.
So I pay someone to do that.
And we appreciate that. As your friendly neighborhood editor, not your editor, but just another editor. Yeah. Kindle or paperback?
Well, depends on whether or not I'm at the beach.
Oh, interesting.
So at the beach, paperback, but otherwise I'm usually using one of my e-readers.
Really? I would have thought it'd be the other way. Okay.
I don't want sand getting in the hardware.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking about the pages getting wet, but I guess you're not that close to the water.
Yeah.
Sneakers or heels?
These days, sneakers. I'm turning 40 next month. Sneakers.
Oh, You're still young. TBR or mood reader?
Mood reader.
That doesn't surprise me, though.
Yeah.
You're a planner, which is interesting. You're a plan ahead, but you're a mood reader.
I am. Yeah. And
you can read something into that. I love it.
Thank you so, so much for hanging out with us.
This is awesome.
And
we're so glad you stopped in.
Yes.
And Julie will do all her magic and get all the links up so everybody knows where to find you with all of your pen names. And we know that you're wide, so we'll get links up so people can find you on their favorite platforms. And what's the next event that you're going to be at?
Is
Ren Fair?
Maryland Ren Fair on September 3rd. And then right after that, October, the first weekend of October, I will be at Authors After Midnight, which is in Charlotte, North Carolina, Fort Mill, South Carolina. It's like right on the border of two cities, apparently. Mm-hmm. And then the weekend after that, I'll be at the Wright Women's Festival in Glendale, Maryland.
Wow. So
if you want a chance to see Golden, that Angel, that's where you need to wind up. Look for those, or online, on TikTok, on all the things. And
Charm City next April.
Charm City in April. Awesome. So thank you. I am so excited. I know we all are. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.